The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So there was supposed to be a different teacher here today, but due to a last-minute switch just a couple days ago, I ended up being here. And it got me thinking, because the reason that we had to switch is that in this other person's life, something had come up and she just needed the time. It wasn't the right time for her to be here. So we did this switch. And I thought, you know, there's some teaching there in the sense of the pace that we do things at, the degree to which we give ourselves the time we need when life happens and events unfold. You know, do we just plow along with everything that we've got on our calendar already? I know you've all got stuff in your calendars over the next however many weeks or months. I mean, do we just say, well, that's the program, the show goes on? Or is there some responsiveness to the way things are? There's a lot of compassion in choosing to go at the right speed, and also in putting out the right amount of effort. Those are kind of two different dimensions. You know, am I rushing? Am I dragging? And also, am I pushing and forcing? Or am I kind of getting a little too lackadaisical? These are actually relevant dimensions of practice, not only in our daily lives and our responsiveness to how things are going, but of course on the cushion also, because you never know how the mind's going to be when you sit down. And do we just sit down and say, well, the program today is breath meditation, that's it? Or is there some sense of checking in? How is my heart? How is my mind? What would be the best? So remember if you were here at that time, the instructions I gave for the walking meditation, which was to walk at the speed where you can sustain mindfulness. It's a great instruction. So walk at the speed where you can sustain mindfulness, because it means that we have to notice our energy level at a given time, how we're walking, how fast we're walking, and then if or how those match up with sustaining mindfulness. I gave some examples, like if you're kind of revved up, then you might want to walk a little bit faster in order to match that. Try to go slower, it can be frustrating. Or the other thing is, I found if I'm trying to go really slow when my mind is a little bit faster, I can have like 10 thoughts between, you know, my foot lifting up and placing. So it's better to have only time for like one thought. So go a little faster, right? So this is an instruction that requires us to be a little bit responsive, you know, to walk at the speed where we can sustain mindfulness. It reminded me then of a story from the suttas about a monk named Sona. I don't know if you've been around long enough, you've heard the Sona story before, but it's a really good one, and I resonate with it a lot. So Sona was a monk from a very wealthy family, actually, and he was very determined to practice very hard and, you know, get enlightenment, because he was used to being successful in life and kind of having things work out. And so he decided to walk and just walk and walk and walk. And so he did this walking meditation for a long time, and his feet started bleeding eventually. He was walking so much. And then so a little too much energy and effort. So then he thought, well, this isn't working. I think I'm going to go back to the lay life. And, you know, I have a house and a family. I don't have to be a monk. I could just go back there and make merit. You know, I could feed the monks when they come and do other good things and have a pretty good life. So he starts thinking along these lines. Maybe I'll disrobe because my feet are bleeding. And the Buddha, of course, hears this and comes and gives him a teaching instead, and says, And the way he does it is he reminds him that during his lay life, he had been a player of a, usually it's translated as a lute, the word is veena in Pali, but it's basically a stringed instrument. And he used to play that, and he reminded him, well, if the strings of your lute or your veena were too tight, too taut, could you play it? You know, was it melodious and easy to play? And he says, well, no, it wasn't. And he says, well, what about if the strings were too loose and kind of floppy? Then was it melodious and easy to play? And he says, no. So he says, well, how about when it was neither too tight nor too loose, just perfectly balanced? And he says, yes, that is when one should play the veena. So he says, well, in the same way, this is an analogy for how much effort you do in practice. And so you can balance, basically have balanced effort, balanced mental faculties, and overall that will be more beneficial. And the last line is very interesting, actually. He says, apply yourself with balanced energy, understand or achieve a balance of your mental faculties, and take that as your theme. So in other words, what does that refer to? My way of reading that is that he's saying, take the balance of your mind as the theme. You know, he says, cultivate this balance and then notice that balance, notice that quality that things are balanced. You can say, well, that sounds kind of abstract, but we know what it feels like to have a balanced mind, just like we know what it feels like to have an instrument that's tuned properly and the strings are the right tautness. You can't say exactly abstractly what the right tautness is. Well, you know, 25 pounds per inch of tension, that's not always going to be right. Depends on the humidity, depends on the temperature, depends on all kinds of other things. So in the same way, we don't know exactly what an abstract balance of mind is, but when we have it, we can make it the object of our attention. So then I started realizing this is actually something that the Buddha says in other ways, in other teachings. So using balance as an object is actually described in other cases. For example, the balance in the body between tension and relaxation. So, you know, the posture that we adopt is one where we can be upright and also relaxed. This, you'll often hear instructions like that. What are we balancing? Well, there's a certain way that if we're too tense, we're not relaxed enough. First of all, that generates a lot of thoughts in the mind and it can stir the energy up. So we don't want to be too tense. But on the other hand, you know, if you're completely relaxed, if you're too relaxed, you think, well, I'm just going to relax, you know. Actually, the body is not comfortable if it's completely limp. Limp is not that comfortable, especially if you're trying to sit up, right? Your back's going to start hurting if you let it have this curvature to it. So there's a degree to which certain things have to be energized and held erect in our posture, not in a tight way. So there can be, we can actually make that an object of our meditation, is my body in a state of being both alert and relaxed. And then, of course, it's not just the body. They feeds in and out with the mind, right? So we can also look at the energy level in the mind. And that's a little bit what was being referred to with Sona. But there's another sutta about a goldsmith. So there's an analogy to bringing the mind into a state of balance where it's going to be able to have insights, basically. And the Buddha's talking about it in an analogy to a goldsmith working with gold to refine gold and make it very pure and bright and malleable and workable so that he can make the gold into whatever, you know, a ring or a chain or a necklace. And so he says, it's just like a goldsmith working gold. Some of the time he's going to give attention to blowing on the fire and, you know, sort of ramping it up so that the gold melts more. And some of the time, he's going to sprinkle it with water so that it cools off and dissipates some of the heat. And some of the time, he's just going to examine closely. You know, he's just going to watch it, basically, because it's doing okay, but he just has to watch to see whether it's going to get out of balance. And this is likened to attending to the factor of concentration in the mind, to the factor of uplifted energy in the mind, and to the factor of equanimity. He says if we have all of those, if we have the concentration and the energy and the equanimity, then the mind is in a workable, malleable, beautiful. I think that it's not an accident that this is likened to gold, which is very, very beautiful, right? It's that we're making our mind into something beautiful by balancing all these faculties, and that's how it's going to be able to see things as they are. And there's even another one, which is the balance of the awakening factors in the mind. I won't go into them in detail, but essentially the awakening factors are divided into three kinds. One set are the energizing factors. One set are the calming factors. And then there's mindfulness. That's the extra one. And mindfulness is used to notice whether the mind is more in need of a little bit of energizing or more in need of a little bit of calming. And so we watch and we have this dynamic paying attention to whether a little more of this or a little more of that. So in sitting practice, using balance as an object can feel like seeking out areas of tension and releasing them if they're, you know, unhelpful, restrictive tension, seeking out areas that feel kind of dull or disconnected and vitalizing them a bit. It can feel like that kind of working on it, and then when there's nothing happening, settling back into ease until it goes out of balance again. Or it could be a sort of a close-in practice where more like surfing or even bobsledding, right, where there's this kind of very fine attunement to little deviations and keeping very quickly, quickly changing state on track. It doesn't matter. It depends on the state of the mind. So it could be a very spacious feeling or it could be a very close-in feeling. But either way, we've decided to take the balance of the mind as our object. It's an interesting thing. It's not the breath, it's not the body, it's not metta, but it's whether the overall state of the mind, is it balanced? I think it's unrealistic to think that we will get our mind into balance and then stay there. I think sometimes because that's part of the mind's tendency to want to grab onto something and make it true all the time. Instead, it's more a dynamic thing. We can always be moving toward balance. Wherever the mind is, we can be moving toward balance, a little this way, a little that way. In daily life, what does that look like? I don't know. What came to mind when I thought of that was that we can have, this is a phrase Gil uses sometimes, a situation-centric view. Often we have a self-centric view. We go in, what is it that I want? What is it that's going to work for me? What is it that's safe for me? How do I need to do this? Etc. It's sort of about, you know, me responding to this external thing, which is a valid perspective. But what if we relaxed and considered the whole situation as a whole, like the way we might consider the whole mind as a whole, and then say, is this in balance? And then we supply what's needed to keep it in balance. And so we're part of it. I mean, we're one of the elements in the whole situation, but we make the situation the center. And they'll help that inform how to respond. So I hope this gives some useful images for you in your sitting, walking, and daily life practice of actually using the balance, this quality of balance as the object of meditation, as something that we keep in mind and move toward as we can. So thank you.